The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We're so excited to be here with the one, the only Gene Park.
The great.
We were saying that out of everyone, yours is the opinion and the insights that we really need to hear. So we're so glad, so grateful that you're here with us. I know you've been very tired and very busy. So we really appreciate you making the time to come on and talk to us about all your latest Switch 2 impressions.
Mm-hmm. So just to get us started, you know, you've covered a lot of different console launches for the Washington Post, and I'm curious.
Not too many, only PS5, Xbox, and now Switch 2. So,
well, that's a bunch.
Yeah.
How does the Switch 2 feel in comparison to the others?
So there's a lot of discourse right now. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much. Well, first of all, thanks so much, Kit and Krista, for having me back on your show. I may be very tired. I think the last time I was on your show, I was also very tired. And I was like, great, I got to be on the show, fully energized, I'm back. And then here I am all ragged and tired again. So maybe we can do this a third time again when I'm super 100% energy. But I'm going to give it my best today, you know?
You're always... Any state we can get you in, we'll
be tired next time.
Yeah, for sure. Compared to the PS5 and Xbox, there's a lot of discourse right now about whether the people aren't really feeling the hype or the excitement of a new console cycle, especially since this is Nintendo, the console manufacturer, right? I concede that part of that is there. And, when I covered PS5 and Xbox, I think part of the excitement was that it was coming out during COVID, like during lockdown. So like to be able to get our new toys, like the next generation, was exciting. And the PS5 has some pretty good launch titles, actually. Like, you know, for me, Demon's Souls Remake was like, is like a day one purchase. Like I would have just bought a PS5 day one for that. And I think to make people understand, like I've only been covering video games since 2019. So obviously it's only been after the PS5 generation that I covered. Before that, I've only bought two consoles at launch ever as a regular consumer. And it was the PlayStation 1, because I was so excited for Sony just entering the market. And I really wanted to play Battle Arena Toshinden. I was really excited for that. And just like 3D games in general. I heard Final Fantasy was going to get on PlayStation 1. So I was like, I guess I'm leaving Nintendo. Because I never owned a Nintendo 64, period. I've never had
one. Me neither. Until like I was an adult and I got it as a collector's item.
I still don't have one. I've never bought one ever. Ever. You know,
we know what to get you for Christmas.
Yeah.
There you go. I played on Nintendo 64, but I always rented it from Blockbuster. So when Ocarina of Time came out, I rented it from Blockbuster. Mario 64, I rented it from Blockbuster. Everything.
Yep. Friends' houses.
The other console was a Nintendo Wii. I just moved to Hawaii and I was with my ex-fiance, and it was just like a week into me moving to Hawaii, and I was like, we should just buy a video game system. And I was like, well, the Wii comes out tomorrow. And she was like, oh, I really want a Wii. I was like, okay, well, let me just wait in line at Best Buy. So I actually waited in line like midnight launch, and I got a Wii. And if you guys remember that back at the time, it was impossible to get a Wii. So I felt super lucky to just get one at launch. That was amazing. But other than that, though, I've always bought consoles like a year or two or three into their cycle. I'll just buy it when like the new Metal Gear comes out or the new FromSoft game comes out, you know? So this has been an interesting experience for me. And so that's why like getting a PS5 and Xbox in that same week was really, really exciting for me. And it was exciting for me as a journalist because I was involved in a new console launch. So, you know, I totally feel that you know, like it's not like I'm not vibrating at the seams for a new Nintendo Switch 2. But that said, you know, I just got my email that I'm getting it. So like it started to kind of set in. I think a lot of people's vibes around the non hype around the console launch has to do with the incremental increases in the generation. You know, the plateauing of technology, the plateauing of a lot of video game ideas. Like, you know, there's not a lot of new video game genres coming out. You know, other than like extraction shooters and, you know, battle royale was probably the last big genre. And then, you know, that back in 2013, like Dark Souls or 2011, Dark Souls and everything like that. So, you know, video games have kind of homogenized and standardized a little bit. So, like, I can't, you know, and a lot of people are saying that I didn't really feel the hype when PS5 came out. You know, Xbox had barely had any launch games. Like Microsoft didn't have any launch games at all. Sony had a few. And the fact that the Switch 2 is not a leap in technology either. So I think that's part of that too. Also, you know, but I'm also confused at people saying, oh, well, Mario Kart is mid. And I'm like, guys, it's Mario Kart. This is like, this
65
is 65
like, million copies talks.
This is GTA 5 divided by 3, I guess. Right. Which is like massive, you know, that's massive, you know, this is a megaton game coming out. Like you can't underestimate this, but it is a long tail, slow, like slow seller game, right? It's just a game that you get when you want it, you know, when it's like, oh, well, you know, well, let's get some Mario Kart, you know? So I think that kind of explains the kind of general ennui around the Switch 2, I think, because at least that's how I feel. And that's from my perspective.
Yeah, we definitely been noting that as well, that there's, I like the way that you have described this, because the way that I've been thinking about it, it's been hard to put into words. Like this feels like there's this underlying current of something that's not just the pure like elation, joy, like childlike Christmas morning tear into the latest Nintendo system joy. Mm-hmm. That past console launches for Nintendo have had that kind of magical feeling. That there definitely is a lot of excitement. I certainly am excited, and I think people that are, you know, very core Nintendo fans are very excited, but there's something strange like underlining all of this. And I'm not sure, I think your point of it being sort of, has it kind of homogenized? Is this iterative approach like good, but not like wow enough for people? Or is it just that we're so used to having so many options now that it's not as special as it once was? Mm-hmm. But there is definitely something there in terms of this particular launch that makes it feel a little bit different and definitely different from past Nintendo launches. This is our first Nintendo launch outside of the company. So we're That's feeling right. like a different kind of, just we're having a different experience, you know, That's with weird. It. Yeah, yeah, it's a little weird. Yeah.
There are proof points out there that completely counter those discourse dialogue points as well. It's like, well, it doesn't seem like anybody's excited. Well, the thing just sold out in pre-orders in seconds. It's probably going to break records, be the fastest selling system ever. It's like, oh, or you know, I'm not interested in Mario Kart, but it's like literally everybody who went to these hands-on events come back saying, oh my god, you got to play Knockout Tour. So it's just been so hard to get a handle on this launch of like, what actually are people of the vast majority of people feeling?
Yeah.
Also, the user interface for the Switch 2 is very similar to the Switch 1. So, like, you know, it's definitely like an iPhone, you know, 10,000 to an iPhone 10,001 type leap or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the way you interact with the console is very similar, other than the mouse controls, which I'm very excited for. I think that opens up so much possibilities for different games. You know, bring Nintendogs back. Nintendo, I know you're listening to Kit and Krista. Bring Nintendogs back. It makes so much sense with the mouse controls.
Pet, you know, the dog just, with the mouse. Yeah, just, yeah, shake a little treat jar. How cute.
Exactly. Just scratch your chin and everything. That,
aww, like,
it
love
opens
that.
Up so many possibilities. That would cause console launch hype, I think. You know,
we need puppies. A lot of cute puppies.
Puppies and cats. But Yeah, but like the user, the way you engage with the system is very similar. The Pro controller, like, you know, I spent a good like 7 hours playing the Pro controller. I forgot that it was a new controller, you know, because it just feels like the regular controller. Like even the triggers are very like there's no analog to them. So it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even when I'm using the Joy-Cons, like other than the mouse controls, like it's very much the same thing too. So I totally get it. Even though I like you said, like Kit said, like there is so much information counteracting that. Like this is going to be a huge launch. Like a lot of people are excited about it. And so like for me as a journalist, I've only been a games journalist for about 5 years. It's easy for me to remove myself from the media hype cycle, and think of myself as a regular consumer. And then when I remember what I was like before 2019, I remember that I didn't care about console launches at all. It's just like it's a new console, and I'll buy it when a new game comes out. You know, I did not buy a PS4 until 2 years later. I didn't buy a Switch 1 until like a year later. I was perfectly happy playing Breath of the Wild on the Wii U. I was like, that is a console they made this for, so I will play it on the Wii U. I bought the Wii U for this goddamn game, you know. So I totally waited for until the Switch 1 populated with more games. You know, the PS3 I didn't get until MGS4 came out. PS2 I actually never owned, actually, again, like because it was always my college roommates. I didn't get one until after college, like 4 years later. You know, Xbox 360 I got it when Gears of War came out. Xbox One I got when Red Dead Redemption 2 came out, and I only got the Xbox One X because it was on 4K. So I just don't buy these. I've never actually been part of the console hype. I never understood it. I'm more hyped for the games that come out for it, you know.
So we were reading earlier your article coming out of the latest preview event that Nintendo had, where you played Mario Kart and Welcome Tour, and you interviewed Mr. Yabuki as mm-hmm. well. But kind of embedded in all of the coverage that we saw coming out of that event is, you know, this fact that early reviews are not happening for this console, and that's kind of a different direction for things to go. I'm curious, like, whatever you can share, like, how did that conversation with Nintendo go? Because I'm sure that's not what you were expecting.
It wasn't, and they told me, and again, I know Nintendo's listening, so I'm trying to be careful with my words. All I was really told, and I didn't really question it because I don't care, but it's like all I was told is that I will not be getting it until after launch because of all these updates that need to happen, right, or whatever. Right. So I'm like, so basically what everyone else heard, basically, and you guys know Nintendo, they're very standardized in their messaging, even to the press, right? That they're going to say the same thing to everyone. So that's what I got the same thing too, that I needed updates. So I will get one on day one, but not before. And it is strange. It is like I'm surprised that they weren't able to make it work out that we can get these updates preloaded in for these special units for at least maybe even a few select outfits. Like maybe if they could have been more selective, that would have been okay, you know? And Video Games Chronicle just did a piece, Andy Robinson.
Yeah, we read that one too.
Yeah. It's very great and very comprehensive on mm-hmm. Why this matters and how that could affect coverage, especially coming out at this extremely, extremely busy time where everyone is over at our Summer Games Fest. You guys are probably going to be there. IGN is having a whole IGN Live event there, and they're mm-hmm. supposed to cover the Switch 2 at the same time. It's going to have this ripple effect on what press coverage is, and it almost seems to me that Nintendo is like, we don't need you at all, actually, you know. Yeah. We don't need the coverage. People are gonna buy this thing. It's a Switch too, you know. Which is an interesting thing to do, because like, you know, even Apple actually gives out, you know, going back to the iPhone analogy, they give out iPhones to Marques Brownlee, and Marques Brownlee just is like, here's my 3 weeks for the iPhone. It's like, dude, the iPhone comes out like 2 weeks later, like he already has it, so he's able to tell us like all the stuff about what he was playing with, you know.
So
I'm surprised that they weren't able to make that work.
How are you getting through the next couple weeks, by the way? Because you are the lone person covering games mm-hmm. for the Washington Post, right? And so you have the Switch 2 launch. There's a State of Play tomorrow. Summer Game Fest is going into this weekend. Then you got the Xbox event. You were telling us beforehand you were just loading up Death Stranding 2. How do you survive this?
The great thing is that because I am the only guy, so my official title at the Washington Post is critic. So it is not my charge to cover breaking news at all. I don't have to do it at all. I can pick and choose if I want to. You know, like a console announcement is huge enough for me to do that. But if it's a game announcement, I won't cover it.
Right.
You know, it could be Resident Evil 10 or whatever like that. GTA 6 is big enough that I will cover that. But if they announce Final Fantasy 17 tomorrow, I won't cover it. Huge game. Massive game. But I won't cover it. Final Fantasy 7 Remake 3 comes out or announced tomorrow. I won't cover it. I will not be covering a lot of Summer Game Fest. Pretty much almost none of it. I have one game that I was able to kind of preview it and do some interviews with beforehand because they were nice enough to reach out. And that's all I'm doing because I'm actually working on a really huge story that I can't talk about at all. But that's going to take me, I've been working on it for the past year.
Oh my gosh.
We are in the final month of doing it. And it is the final stretch of getting the story out. So that is my number one priority over everything, even including Death Stranding 2.
Wow. So, I can't wait to see the story. That's going to be so
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a huge story. And basically, yeah, I told my editors, like, I'm not doing anything for this month other than this thing and Death Stranding 2, I guess, because I got to play Death Stranding 2, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's great that you're able to, like, kind of hold the key to your own destiny a little bit. And we were feeling quite sorry for a lot of people that just don't have the luxury of choice like you do. And like we do, where they're like, I have to go to Summer Game Fest and I have to cover all these things and I can't even get my Switch 2 until after I come back and so on and so forth. It just seems, to your point though, it just seems like the space is so crowded. Like we all know that the June timeframe has traditionally been just very crowded for video games. And there definitely is sort of the you know, the Trump all card of like launch a new console and you'll get the top billing in terms of like coverage or whatever. But bizarre and strange that Nintendo had this kind of approach when it came to reviews or just working with the media on getting the story that they want out there for a new system. They're, you know, sort of entering into this new generation and you would think that they want to, you know, tell that story in their own way and have media and others be part of that dissemination of that story and that narrative. So yeah, really interesting. I really enjoyed Andy Robinson's piece as well on this. And we've been talking to others that have kind of lived through these kinds of cycles and have definitely share their opinion about like it's an odd thing for Nintendo to be doing and yes, one could argue you don't need it. Mm-hmm. You don't need any of this stuff. It would just sell itself as they say, but it's almost like one day you'll need it.
Yep.
That's just the cyclical nature of life.
Yeah.
And when you do need it one day, you won't be able to get it. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a bad day, you know?
One thing Andy really pointed out that has nothing to do with Nintendo itself, but was very poignant, and we talked about this, I talked about this with other journalists as well at the Nintendo preview event, is that the third-party games aren't going to be covered, you know?
That's the real loser, I think,
is a real loser, yeah. And you would want that out there, you know?
But yeah, if I were a third party partner, I would be upset. Like
I'd be a little annoyed. Yeah.
If I were one of those launch titles that, you know, and I've been spending all of my resources to support this new hardware and I've entered into this partnership, I would be like, you're not holding up your end of the bargain to making this a success for me. So why would I want to work with you again? You know? So for sure. Yeah.
To be fair, Nintendo is elevating a lot of their creators' voice program. And they've been using that for a lot of third parties. You know, they got Borderlands 4 on there. Of course, CD Projekt Red and all this. So
Split Nintendo, Fiction,
exactly. Split Fiction as well. Joseph Ferris. So they are putting a lot of their marketing muscle behind the third party, and it feels like that's what's making up for the lack of coverage. In general, I was wondering if you guys have any insight on that. But first of all, I understand. I'm very very privileged to be working at the Washington Post and being able to pick and choose. That's why like a lot of people ask, like, tell me, like, Gene, why don't you just go into content creation? You know, like you have a following, like you can probably easily just start a Patreon or a Substack, and people will read it, right? And it's like, I'm not in the rat race that you guys are, you know? I don't have to cover every single game announcement. If I become a content creator, I'm going to have to compete with you guys. maybe I'll try to figure something else out, right? But I'm going to have to start having takes about every single thing. And it's like, I enjoy having the prestige and the privilege of being able to kind of relax and just kind of choose my own adventure, basically.
You know? Now you're just putting those takes out on Twitter where they're free. Oh, my goodness. And you are an essential Twitter follow, by the way. But we have been on that story of the no review units going out since.
Yeah, I haven't watched your coverage. Sorry. So sorry, this is repetitive for the audience. So.
No, not at all.
So, you know, that was something that we've been on since the beginning. And we got a really interesting response from people who watched our videos. And maybe it was surprising to us simply because we worked in PR and that was kind of our life for so long, where there were a lot of people saying, I don't care. I've already made up my mind about what I'm going to buy or not. I have my favorite content creator who I actually trust more than whatever media outlet. I feel like I have a tighter relationship with them than I do with, you know, random fill in the blank writer at IGN, you know, no shade to them. What do you see is like the role of traditional media covering games these days? And obviously your perspective and audience at the Washington Post is different than an IGN, but just broadly, like, where do you see you guys fitting into that?
Well, that's why I leverage so much of my personality and my name, you know, because that's something that the Washington Post or even mainstream media struggles with, you know. My old colleague Taylor Lorenz understands the value in that, and that's why she's able to become a successful content creator on her own. And a lot of that is because she felt kind of like hamstrung by the mainstream media not understanding how to leverage personality based journalism and the kind of trust that we can establish with folks. Because exactly what you said is exactly what I say too. I don't trust other journalists with their takes. I trust my favorite content creators, you know, my favorite YouTubers and Twitch streamers, you know. I operate the same way. And because I am a fan of these, and again, I haven't been a game journalist since 2019. So I have only been following content creators up until then. So for me as a fan, I understand inherently like why that stuff is valuable. And I try to do that on my own too. That's why I'm on Twitter. That's why I have podcasts. That's why I'm showing up here so people can know my name, so they can understand like my tastes. Like one of the first stories I ever did at the Washington Post as a games reporter was I just ranked every Zelda game. Very easy to do, but it's a very, very easy way to read someone's personality. Which Zelda game is their favorite one, you know? That shows you, do they prefer puzzles? Do they prefer open world? Do they prefer narrative? Do they prefer this or that, right? So it's like that was like an introduction to people. Like, this is the kind of gamer I am. This is how you understand my tastes. So when you read my reviews in the future, you can understand where I'm coming from. You know, I'm someone who actually doesn't care about story all that much in video games. You know, I think a great story can elevate a good game into a great game. So I understand the value in that. But I think a great game can have a terrible story. You know, the more people understand it about me, the more they can connect with me, the more they can trust my opinion, you know, the more. So that's why, like, my articles and my reviews, you know, I reviewed and interviewed Metaphor last year. But my piece came out like a full month afterwards. I slept on the game. I did not know the game was going to be that good or that big. So I just completely like slept on it until after launch. I just played it and I was like, oh, I love this game. It's brilliant. And like other people love it. So I was like, let me write a piece on it. That piece did blockbuster numbers. It was huge. Like so much so that the top editors in chief at the Washington Post noticed. They're like, wow, this game review did really well for us, you know? And that's because people were waiting to hear what I wanted to say about Metaphor, you know? So I completely understand that people don't care about the mainstream media opinions, including my own colleagues, you know, that they don't care about my own colleagues' opinions, you know. I'm different. I'm trying to be different from that, you know. I want to be the modern-day newspaper critic who is able to leverage YouTube and podcasts and you know, I don't do TikTok because I'm too old for that already. I understand. I understand where my lanes are, you know. I won't be doing any dances anytime soon. But you know, if the more people know me and my cat here, Jack, then the more people will trust me and the more people will tune into me. And that's why like a lot of people will say like, oh, you don't need the Washington Post anymore. And it's like, well, I kind of do. And I kind of like being at the Washington Post and using their privilege because, you know, as you guys might have noticed, I interviewed Miyamoto for the first time in person 2 weeks ago. Would I have been able to get that opportunity if I had a Substack?
Right.
I don't know. Probably not. Yeah. You know, I don't think Nintendo would have given that to me. You know, I think they liked the fact that I was able to place Miyamoto prominently in a beautiful front page, like display and the print page. I understand the value. I used to work in PR too. Did I tell you guys that?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. You get the value of the
yeah. So I completely understand the value that the client wants of for print media and the kind of value that might have and the long legs that
especially might have. Nintendo. They still love the very traditional, like, we want the New York Times, we want the Washington Post, we want the prestige, you know, newspaper placement, because we're more than just some pithy video game company. We are a cultural entertainment juggernaut, and we want that type of coverage because that's who we are and that's what we deserve. Mm-hmm. So, that's so true. And you're very clever and smart in the way that you leverage all those different channels to your own advantage, as you should. But I do think it's so interesting that, you know, games coverage.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Games, media, whatever you want to call it, is just changing so much, and that the landscape itself is just, you know, evolving every single day. It's like it's a different landscape. And, you know, Kit and I, we both worked in PR for, gosh, like 15 years or something. Like, it's been like a ridiculous roller coaster of like, how it was 15 years ago is unrecognizable to what it is today.
Yeah, and you understand it extremely well. I mean, look at Kit and Krista. That's wonderful branding. You guys immediately jumped into content creation right away. You understood the power of your brands, and you leveraged it right away too. You know, very, very smart. Yeah. And look at you guys. You guys are super successful. You know, it's been great to see you guys just kind of like glow up. You know,
feel so seen and validated. All right, let's talk about Mario Kart World because, you know, we were just talking about how it's kind of weird that people are like, this is not the launch game for me. I mean, I agree. It is like, it's not like Breath of the Wild was for Switch 1 where it feels it's a Zelda game. Oh my gosh. But this is a different kind of launch title, but certainly not a mid game as some would say. And yes, we were joking around. We're like, I don't know, 65 million copies might say otherwise. But you definitely have been playing a ton of Mario Kart World, and you recently went to that preview event and played like what, 8 hours of that game or something. Mm-hmm. What do you like it? Do you hate it? Has there been anything that surprised you? Is this like the next generation of Mario Kart? Are we ready for what's coming?
I love it. I think it could easily be someone's greatest game of all time. Especially if you're young. I do acknowledge that the open world or not. So Yabuki even mentions this in my piece.
Interconnected. Like,
interconnected?
Yeah, we don't call it open world. We call it seamless interconnected world. Or whatever.
Ooh, like okay. That, you
know? But the free roam mode, right? I acknowledge that it is actually pretty sparse, as from what I can tell, that there's not like there's no like moons to collect like in Super Mario Odyssey and like or like shrines to do like in Breath of the Wild. You're doing piece switches and you're doing these little puzzles and activities. But I had a pretty good time just vibing out and like driving around the world, like, because, you know, for me as a longtime, lifelong Mario fan, this is the first time I actually get to move around in a seamless Mushroom Kingdom. This has never happened before. Every Mario game from Odyssey to Mario 64 is always cut off at borders. You jump into this world, you jump into this planet, like galaxy. But it's like, no, this is the proper Mushroom Kingdom represented and digitized. And I think for me, the allure and the novelty of that is enough for me to just kind of drive around and enjoy the gorgeous soundtrack. Like, the Mario Kart World soundtrack is incredible. Like IGN, and I completely agree with Logan Plant, who's a great writer over at IGN. He's an up-and-comer. Yeah, he's very, very knowledgeable about Nintendo. He said that he might be the greatest Nintendo soundtrack ever, and I'm inclined to agree. Because I spent an amazing amount of time just doing nothing and just listening to the music. I love when games allow you to do nothing. Well, again, I can't wait to play Death Stranding 2, you know? But I was also surprised at how traditional it is. You know, it's just Grand Prix. It's a lot about racing and just a lot about chaotic fun and battle modes and everything like that. So it's pretty much the same Mario Kart, but just in a interesting new setup and background that's just connecting it all, you know? So it really just feel like the free roam part isn't the main attraction of Mario Kart World, but it is the underlying philosophy of how they were able to design, like, the rest of Mario Kart, you know? This is how we're going to design Grand Prix around this. We're going to design Knockout Tour around this. So it wasn't the main event, but it was like kind of like their guiding principle on how they're going to approach and design the game moving forward. But ultimately, it still very much retains the Mario Kart feel. I think having 24 players is huge. You know, spoilers for the Mario movie, but, you know, there's a huge Mario Kart battle at the end, but there's like so many characters like involved in a fight, right? So when I'm playing Mario Kart World, it's like, this feels like I'm playing the movie version of that, you know?
That's cool.
It really feels very cinematic. There's like people, you know, jumping all over this and grinding that and flying over there. Like, there's so much going on. And like, once you see all that in motion, you kind of start to understand, like, oh, I understand why they made the game like this, basically.
Does it feel next gen to you?
That's tough. And I think that goes back to the question of whether the Switch 2 is all that exciting, because it still looks like Nintendo. It still looks good. But, you know, like, it definitely wasn't the leap from when I saw, even on the Wii U, when I saw Super Mario U Deluxe. And that was like that's the first HD 2D Mario, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I saw that, I was like, whoa, it just like a door opened in my brain or something, you know? It felt really, really cool. I'm not getting that here.
Absolutely. Okay.
You know, when I saw Breath of the Wild for the first time, that is like a life-changing moment, you know?
Yes.
You don't get that here with Mario Kart World.
Got it.
But when you do see the vast expanse of the world, like, it's still very impressive. I call Mario Kart World the lands between a Mario Kart, you know? Like, this is like a massive Elden Ring like world that you just get to drive around and, you know, pick up different costumes and eating burgers and throwing shells and everything like that. So it's like, when you really think about it that way, that it's very, very fun and very, very impressive. But
yeah.
I definitely acknowledge that it's not like seeing Donkey Kong Country for the first time when I played in a Super Nintendo or Ocarina of Time or anything like that. But again, I think that goes back to sort of the plateauing of graphics and technology. And it's like, you know, like, I highly doubt that the PSX is going to be that impressive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, more DLSS, you know? Congratulations.
Yeah. Ray tracing or something.
Yeah.
Anything that surprised you? We were talking about how, you know, from the announcement and of the Switch 2 Direct back in April, and then they did like that big segment on Mario Kart, and then they were kind of like teasing and hinting, they being the devs, like, just you wait until the Mario Kart Direct, then you'll really see what's going on. Mm. And the Mario Kart Direct came and went, and we're like, well, it looks cool, but did we see something that was super surprising? And then, like, previews happened, and it's like, just you wait, you'll really see it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that we actually ever saw it, but did you see something that you were like, oh my gosh, this is such a big...
Oh,
okay.
And that's why I was, I believed the hype. Like, I was totally on board with them when they were like, just wait till the direct. And I was like, yeah, just wait, guys.
I was a sucker.
There's some hidden things that we didn't get to see in April.
Krista's still waiting.
It was such a curated. Did you go to the Switch 2 event? Yeah, you guys had to.
No.
Right?
No, we didn't get into any of those.
Oh, dang. Okay.
I know.
So when I went to the April event in New York City, it's such so curated. Like this is like Grand Prix mode. And like you go upstairs and like this is knockout tour mode. You can't mess around with the menus. You can't see anything. It was like, oh, here's free roam mode. You can play it for like a couple minutes or whatever like that. Right? So I was like, oh, they're hiding something. Uh-huh. And then when I saw the direct, I was like, it looks cool, but there's no like megaton feature that really changes the game. Like, you know, like a lot of people were expecting like, oh, maybe you can just walk out of the car and like, it just becomes like a regular Mario game that you can just like,
That's a cool theory that I haven't heard yet. I love that. Yeah.
and that got my mind racing. Like, oh my God, like imagine if you can just like jump on the blocks or jump on Peach's Castle and just find other stuff. And that's not happening. You're stuck in the car forever.
You're in the car. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting how they did that. Usually Nintendo is like the antithesis of like, I'm going to hype you. I'm going to like really not manage your expectations, especially because so many of them were saying like developers and Nintendo spokespeople alike were like, just wait until this Mario Kart director. Like, okay. But good to know. Temper the expectations, but obviously this is going to be a huge game. I think we're all super excited about it and what we're getting is going to be incredible. So yeah,
I think all the journalists were looking for that special thing and it just wasn't there. You know?
Got it.
So that's why I latched on to my special thing as just driving around the world and just vibing out and listen.
Music.
Special thing was the music, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's the music.
Like, I can't wait. They need to put that on Nintendo Music app. Like,
we want it.
Like, that would just be on the front page of my phone. I'll just be listening to it all day, you know?
Yes, the soundtrack of your life.
Hearing like these ska versions of the Super Mario 3 song. Like, because like Koji Kondo, like who I interviewed, I got the privilege to interview last year. That was incredible to meet him too. But like he's got such a knack for like all these like reggaeton, like bluegrass and jazz like genres. And like here they are with a full band, like fully giving like all their effort and talents into recreating the music. And I think that was special for me. But obviously that's not like the big hook for Mario Kart World.
They need to do like the live concerts. You know how they did that a few times a year. Oh my gosh, we all need the live concert for the Mario Kart World soundtrack.
That'd be amazing.
Big band, that would be incredible.
Yeah, big old band.
Yeah, I would love that.
Like massive horn section.
Yes, exactly. Oh my gosh, that would be so cool.
Krista is stalling right now because she doesn't want me to ask you about Welcome Tour, which is of course the other game that was there and has been controversial between the two of us because I've said, I'm willing to throw $10 this way and check it out. And she has put her foot down and say, this is a bridge too far. I won't do it. You seem to be mildly intrigued from the event. Yes.
I'm not even mildly intrigued. Oh. I think it might be like a real hit.
Full on intrigued. Okay.
Full intrigued. Yeah. Wow. Tell us more.
Cause here's the thing. Like, let me grab my Nintendo Switch here.
Oh,
so like, you know, the Nintendo Switch, like you're playing on the Switch and like the Welcome Tour is like here, right? So like this is like Zone A and your little guys are walking around like going onto little info booths and Zone B is like this entire screen. So it's like, oh, it's like it goes to like Zone C or D, right? No, I think it goes actually to Zone Z maybe, man. I think there's like whole worlds like hidden in Welcome Tour and then you need to unlock that stuff. So like you're not gonna go to Zone C until you finish everything in Zone B and get all the medals.
But what's in it?
All these mini games. It's just a lot of fun mini games. Like they're like WarioWare like mini games actually. You know?
Okay.
And they're like timed and like, or like skill based. So I'm like, oh, I didn't get the time right. I gotta go back and I gotta get that medal. You know, like if you're really into like mini games and challenge games like Mario Party like games but solo, like that's Welcome Tour actually.
Okay.
They use a lot of the features of the system, you know, like moving your mouse around not to get hit or whatever. I love that game so much. Like there's all these spike balls coming down and you have to like move the mouse around to like not get hit.
It's all single player experiences?
Single player,
yeah. Mini games? Okay, okay.
Yeah. I wonder if it could be two player, but it feels like it's single player. It'd be fun if it was two player.
Kit and I did a thing where you're supposed to play a game with a mouse in each hand. We just separated it and I had one mouse and he had the other mouse and we
there you go.
playing with it. So maybe, maybe
it's, imagine playing drag and drive like that.
With another person? Oh, gosh.
Two people. Yeah, that'd be ridiculous.
You're not doing it right.
Yeah, that'd be a good
challenge. Is your mind being changed right now?
No, I'm sorry. It just isn't. Maybe if I see more.
You're a stubborn person. I know that about you.
Maybe if I see more about like the actual playing.
Here's the thing, like zone L. So like they'll have like the other accessories. So like there'll be a bridge out to like, here's like the camera world, whatever. And then like there's probably a game with the cameras or whatever. Here's like the pro controller world.
But I don't want to buy a camera or a pro controller. Does that mean I can't play?
The games are there. I have no idea because I actually didn't get to see it. I only went up to like zone like D or E, but then I saw zone L there, and I'm like, okay. How is there zone L? This is crazy. Yeah,
Krista's going to be in zone L, zone loser. Yeah.
I'm going to be in zone W.
But then like there's an elevator that goes down inside the Joy-Con, so like there's like worlds like inside the Switch itself.
That's cute
too.
That they like theme park the actual system, so it feels like you're in like a little miniaturized version of.
The footage from this preview event had more character than what I'd seen before.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, a theme park ride type of thing.
Yeah, I get that.
And you talk about character and additional more character. I think again, like Nintendo's messaging is kind of weird here because it's like, you know, like even I thought, everyone thought, of course, why wouldn't you think that this is just a tech demo? And it kind of is, right? But no, it's a fully featured like collection of mini games, you know. Sorry, going back to your point of kid about character. Imagine if Welcome Tour was your tour guide was Kirby or something, you know?
Right, right. Like, or they needed like an Astrobot version of a Nintendo,
exactly,
a Nintendoized Astrobot.
Yeah.
You know?
Instead, your character are these like very like 2011 era social media like profile picture Facebook people, like very generic,
like boomer era Facebook people,
boomer era Facebook like social media like vibes or whatever like that, like,
oh no,
or like Just Dance NPCs or whatever like that, you know? It's weird that they decided to go with this like flavorless like people characters to like move around and faceless. Interesting choice as opposed to going for like, you know, one of their cute characters or having Mario or Princess Peach.
Yeah.
And like, oh, welcome to my castle or welcome to the Switch 2 or whatever like that, you know? Cute. It's like, also confounding is why, again, Dragon Drive, like why does everyone look like Halo ODST characters and not like, not like ARMS characters or whatever like that?
Some kind of like generic, there's some genericness on definitely on Welcome Tour that made me feel like, is this just looking at a manual, looking at sort of like a digitized, like, you know, information, just like menus or whatever, or the way that you're talking about, it sounds definitely more intriguing in terms of like, there is these mini games that feel challenging and fun and replayable. And like, you're not going to get them on the first try and you're going to be incentivized. So like, oh, I need to get that medal. Like that does sound very fun and sounds like it's more than just like, learn about a magnet and read, like click through the pages to read about a magnet.
It's not that at all. Well, there's a lot of that actually. Like there's info desks and they're like, oh, you want to know more info? And they're like, bloop, 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 bloop. And there's like just more stuff to read and stuff like that. So it's a lot of reading, but like, I don't need to, like, I'm here for the mini games, man. Like the next mini game, you know?
And there seems to be plenty of those.
There seems to be plenty of those.
Yeah.
So that's why like people are like, I'm saying like, I think this is actually deeper than Astrobot, man. I think it's actually longer than Astrobot, you know, because like I love Astrobot Playroom. I think it's a fantastic demo.
Too.
I think it's beautiful. I Astrobot was my game of the year too last year, right? So Astro Playroom was amazing. It has so much charm in that character that Kit was talking about. But it's a short game. You're kind of done with it in like 3-4 hours, right? I think Welcome Tour might actually be a longer game. So it's like I'm starting to see. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm starting to see why they figured they can charge $10 or whatever they're charging for it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
Before we go with you, we do want to ask about some of the cool interviews that you have done recently. The Miyamoto one is fantastic.
I'm not in any rush too, by the way. So, you know, I'm having fun talking with you guys.
Oh, good.
Woken up. We're giving you a second wind.
My second wind is here again. You know, it's like a...
You seem to be able to have really good conversations with these developers. And, you know, we've sat in on a lot of them ourselves on a PR standpoint, and we've seen, you know, people interview them, and it's like, these people are getting nowhere. They're getting answers that are basically off of a fact sheet. They're not getting to the person behind, you know, the game or the project or whatever. How do you connect with these people who you've maybe never met before and have these really interesting conversations that are so fun for us to read?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, and thanks for noticing that. I think a lot of people are starting to notice that, you know, like I even told Mr. Yabuki about, like, you know, how Joe Biden was playing Mario Kart. You know?
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, in the era of AI, right, and replaceable writers and replaceable content, especially writing content, and at the Washington Post, we've been playing with AI for a long, long time. A lot of people don't know that, but we, like, our local sports coverage is written by AI. Nobody goes to those games. We just pull the numbers and it's just up on the story, you know.
It's pretty cool.
But it's pretty smart though, because nobody
would, smart,
nobody,
yeah.
Nobody would go to those games, so that's one way to just get the scores up and everything, right? So like even headline writing, you know, that's AI driven in terms of like, you know, like what headlines would like work, and like my AI headline expertise is actually fed into that AI too, which is fun, you know.
You're a machine learning data point.
Exactly.
Oh, so, no.
So understanding what AI can pull from and replicate, I try to write articles and content and have conversations that AI would never be able to do. I really try to reach into the human side of its creators, you know? So that's why I did my interview with Eiji Aonuma during the Tears of the Kingdom launch, and we really focused on his age and like, what's like to test this game and play, you know, like I'm 43. I'm already getting tired when I'm playing games for two, like the Mario Kart World Tour, world preview event. I got so exhausted. I don't play games for 7 hours straight. I just simply don't. I take the Kojima route and after an hour or two, I take a break. I do stretches and, you know,
yeah, me too.
Like maybe get a snack or, you know, pet my cat and just hang out for like a 30 minutes or an hour. And I get back to the game, you know. I don't play games constantly. So I was like, Aonuma-san, how do you do this? And he would talk about that. So Miyamoto, I talked about, what fulfills them. I really want to try to get to the core of what drives these people. You know, Koji Kondo was a difficult interview because, you know, I'm really interested in the kinds of music that he would listen to on his free time. And he just wouldn't have an answer for that, you know? And
he's just like very shy.
He's a little shy, yeah.
He's super shy. Oh, my goodness. He's the shyest person. He's probably the shyest person I've ever interviewed.
Yeah, he doesn't do that very many interviews to begin with. So it's tough to – I think it's hard for him. It's him, yeah.
Exactly. So I really try to do like, oh, so how do you engage with music on your off time? So he's like – he's talking about when he goes on walks and he's like listening to classical music and he's like in the forest. Yeah. And he's like, oh, that kind of reminds me of my dad, because my dad likes to take a lot of walks and like just listen to music or read books along the way, just keep his mind sharp or whatever, you know. You know, Kojima, like my interview with Kojima was really great because I really try to get to the core of the message, you know. Also, like my interview with the Metaphor director, I'm forgetting his name right now, but you know, I really try to get to understand the game, and you know, he was struck by a question I asked him where I was like, why is it so important for your games to feel so hopeful? You know, and he was like, wow, no one's ever actually asked me that before.
Wow. That's
Which is weird because it's like, that's a very basic question, right?
So I don't know if that's a great question. I would never think of something like that.
it's like, why is it so important that it's so hope core, your games, you know? Why do you seem to really center in on that message? And that's why he was able to give me a really fulfilling answer. And again, a lot of people was driven by that. My favorite game last year was Mouthwashing, this horror game.
Yes.
Amazing, incredible game. Like, I think that one of the best written games of recent times, and it was only 3 hours long. And I really, I asked the writer, I was like, who is this game about? You know, like who are you talking about? Because you're talking about some deep seated things. And she said, like, you know, this is a message for the games industry, you know, and how the games industry and people in there enable like hurtful people in the industry, you know. And I was like, that's so fascinating. That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know? So like, I really try to get to the heart and the core of what drives these people, you know. Neil Druckmann, you know, like he listens to Pearl Jam and Nirvana all the time. So I want to ask him about that. Like, what are your favorite songs? The thing is that I video games don't dominate my life like some people. Like I don't live and breathe video games. I have a lot. Like I never got into journalism because I wanted to cover video games. I wanted to cover music, you know.
Right.
So a lot of my questions are kind of like music focused, or like I read interviews of like old rock stars, you know, and movie directors, and I pay attention to what they talk about. And you don't see that kind of interviews in the game space, you know. You don't see those kind of like real candid conversations about people's emotions and thoughts and what drives them. It's always about, oh, how'd you think about this feature, and why is the cow like this, and you know, and like, you know, there's a lot of value in that coverage, and it's a lot of fun, you know, and there's a lot of people doing that, but there's nobody doing it the way I do it. You know?
Well, you just, what you said about, you know, being, having interests that go beyond games, it's something clicked for me, because that's really like who Nintendo is looking for to make games, is people who are not just like so tunnel vision of like, I do nothing but play games 24/7. It's probably why you see them get so bored answering these questions of, you know, tell me about the multiplayer. It's like, they want to talk about something else. So that makes perfect sense to me now why you're able to connect with these people.
Yeah. That's, and I think what's really interesting about the way that you do, and what's really amazing about the way that you kind of approach these conversations, is that you're not like totally driven by like, I need to get the scoop. I need to get someone to like break some new news to me. Because I, again, to your point of like, a lot of these people are in the rat race. And if you don't get like the scoop or like that next clickbaity headline, then your article is one of 20.
Nope.
You're so like, your focus is so much on like, I want to know you as a human, as a person. Yep. Let's connect as people versus let's connect on, you know, the work that you're doing and like what you're doing next. Yep. So I think that's incredible. I wish there isn't going to be, because you're a one of a kind person, but there should be more people out there trying to get these amazing people to tell their story, because who else is going to enable them to tell their story? You know what I mean? Like, if there's nobody like you asking those questions, they just kind of let those stories sit within themselves and then that's it? Like, that would be really unfortunate.
Yeah. And so that's the thing. Like, I've been an audience editor for most of my career at the Washington Post. I've been working for 10 years now, right? And only four of those have actually been in games journalism. Six of those were in the audience area, social media, growing audiences and everything like that. So that's why, like, you know, to your point, Kit, like, Nintendo is always thinking about the audience. They're always thinking about who we can reach out to that doesn't read or engage with our stuff or play our stuff, right? So I'm already in that mindset already. Where was it going with this? I just try to think of the broader audience, you know. Like I think, Kit, you mentioned that, like, you know, like I talk about games in a different way. And so thank you for noticing that. I really appreciate that. You know, it's definitely something that I try to do. Oh, that's what I was trying to say. As an audience editor, I would always advise reporters like, oh, you need to think about the SEO. You need to think about, you know, the headline, and you need to think about, you know, like what keywords you're using, right? I want to break out of that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm tired of that. And as a writer, I don't want to write for machines. I don't want to write for algorithms. I want to write for people.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
It's a very, very simple, very, very simple slogan of mine. But it's like, I'm not writing for machines. I'm writing for people.
I love it.
You know, the AI won't be able to replicate my Miyamoto interview. They won't be able to replicate, but they can replicate the scoop, right?
That's the thing. Yeah, that is so like transactional.
Yeah.
But getting someone to open up about who they are as a person and what their belief system is and what their moral compass is, that's something that is very difficult to do when you're, you know, when you're like a AI or whatever. So yeah,
you'll never hear a story.
You'll never hear it.
Yeah. You'll never hear a story from me saying, oh, Witcher 4 announcement date, you know, like that is the kind of journalism I'm absolutely not interested in.
Yeah.
There are thousands of people doing that already, including in the YouTube space and in the journalism space. I want to carve out my own niche, you know?
Yeah.
And like, something that, you know, and there's so many like Twitter, like aggregators, you know, like Wario64, God bless Wario64, right? But like, you know, or like Kami or whatever like that, they'll just like pick out bullet points in your story. They're like, oh, this feature is this, and it's 60 frames per second. I don't care about any of that. I don't care about any of that at all. I want to know.
Someone's already doing it. It's all good. Someone was, we got that already.
Everyone's already doing it. And also recognizing that it's just me, you know. So it's like I need to. This is also out of necessity. I can't just chase everyone else. That's going to be crazy. And I don't have the connections in the industry. I'm not a Jason Schreier. Like, I'm not getting like all these scoops from like people like behind the scenes or whatever like that. And I'm not interested in that at all. He can keep it. You know, he does a great job. I don't need to replicate that at all. Yeah. I want to do my own thing, you know.
Yeah. We have so much respect for you, Gene. You're the best.
It means so much for us to have you on to talk about this launch, because again, you just have a very special perspective on it that it means a lot to be able to share that with our audience. I know you've had a crazy day, so thank you again for joining us.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thanks for recognizing that. Yeah, I look at Nintendo as a real special company, and that does a lot of, you know, like you guys said, like they're always thinking about, you know, the casual audience or the light users, I think that Iwata would call them, right? And that's what I care about journalism that same way. You know, I was always trying to advise the Washington Post on stop covering Trump so much, because eventually people are going to tune out, and sure enough they did, but we just kept covering Trump, and it's like, God, you know, like we need to go beyond this. We need to go beyond like the bucket list, blah blah blah, you know. That's what I try. So you know, I try to live up to my own advice. You know, if nobody will listen to me, I will listen to myself.
There you go.
Inspirational.
That's inspirational.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to let you go and get some much deserved rest. Thank you again so much for being here with us. This has been such a exciting conversation. And I think it's the perfect thing that we just needed to like hold us over until we get our Switch 2s tomorrow. Yay!
Well, thank you so much for giving me your platform. Yeah. And congratulations on all your guys' success. It's been so great to watch your content. And you guys are like the premier Nintendo insider channel.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.